things. So in the beginning of Bichul Kosai, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing the brachas, so it's a lot of iconic words. Probably the word that's most relevant for this time of the season is Kom Miyut. Kom Miyut is a word that's associated with the first war. The War of Independence was known as the War of Kom Miyut, where Jews reestablished their pride, their ability to walk tall. So the word Kom Miyut is one of the iconic words. But another iconic imagery is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you follow the mitzvahs and you abide by my laws, you abide by the Torah, v'hisalachti b'tochachem. What does that mean, that I'll walk with you? V'hisalachti b'tochachem. So it's very interesting. Rashi traces this word v'hisalachti b'tochachem to an earlier stage, an earlier pasuk in the Torah. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu mishalech b'toch hagan. Hashem was walking in Gan Eden with Adam HaRishon. So essentially the pasuk is saying, I'll take you back to an earlier stage of history and an earlier stage of human perfection. Rashi says, Atayel imachem b'Gan Eden. I'll walk with you in Gan Eden, ki echad mikem, and we'll be equivalent, we'll be equal, we'll be similar. V'lo tiu mizdazim, and you won't be shocked, you won't be terrified by my presence. Yachalo tiu rabi meni, so you think that maybe you won't be afraid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tamar lomer v'yisi lachem le'elokim. The next phrase is, I'll still be the hierarchy of me being Elohim and you being basar v'dam, will still be retained. So this is a very, very layered Rashi. On the one hand, Rashi is saying that the perfect state, forget the word Gan Eden for a moment, the perfect state of a human being and his relationship with Hashem is on the one hand to be equals, to be v'salachti b'tochem, like two people taking a walk together, atayel imchem, or walk together. You won't be shocked or be unnerved or terrified by Hashem's presence, but the hierarchy between man and God won't be obliterated. So namely, yira will exist, shock and terror and trepidation won't exist. Hizdazut won't exist, but yira will exist. So first of all, it reminds us that the word yira doesn't mean fear and trembling. The word yira means hierarchy and submission and recognizing the difference between HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even though you won't have that unnerved anxiety by being in the presence of Hashem, you'll still have yira, you'll still have hierarchy. That's number one. Number two is that our goal is to get back to Gan Eden. That you know, for Am Yisrael, and for man in general, there was at the beginning of history a perfect state. That perfect state represented not a perfect state because there was so much food, and not a perfect state because there was so much pleasant pleasure, and not a perfect state, but the perfect state of Gan Eden, the one aspect of Gan Eden that captures the perfection of man, is the ease of the relationship between a man and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the part of Gan Eden that we're looking to restore. Not how much food, not how much water, but that v'salachti b'tochachem, that I'll return you to that original state. In Judaism, history is cyclical. We're looking to get back to the original state. That original state is b'tochachem. That I'll be, if you want, by way of contrasting it, v'shachanti b'tocham, that's not the perfect state. V'shachanti b'tocham, v'asili mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham in Parshas Truma, it just means there's a building, and my presence is there, and you can come and meet me, but it's not the same level of equivalence or parity that v'hishalachti b'tochachem conveys. V'shachanti b'tochachem means my shechina, my presence will be found amongst you. V'hishalachti b'tochachem is more intimate. I will walk amongst you. So that's the core meaning of Rashi. What's fascinating about Rashi is, does he really mean Gan Eden? Is the end of history, or is the utopia of Jewish history recognized back to Gan Eden, or is this just a metaphor that you will live in a Gan Eden-like state? Rashi doesn't say that I'll take you to an experience that's similar to Gan Eden. Rashi says, Atayel imachem big Gan Eden. Now, we typically think Gan Eden is no longer part of this world, that you may go to Gan Eden, Mirz Hashem, in the next world. But the Torah doesn't really refer to the next world. The Torah only refers to this world. There's no mention of Olam Haba, the next world. And it doesn't seem like this is a description of Olam Haba. This seems like a description of Olam Hazeh. So this Rashi may hold out the notion that though Olam Haba is another world, re-achieving Gan Eden may happen in this world at the end of time when Jewish experience is repaired and Jewish utopia is achieved. So there really are three layers to this Rashi. One layer to the Rashi, differentiating between shock, tremble, trepidation, and yira, which is hierarchy. Number two, there's a difference between v'shachanti b'tocham v'salachti b'tochachem. The highest state is not just to have the Shechina, but to have that ease of the relationship. Number three, does it happen in Gan Eden? Is that what Rashi really means? Or is Hashem promising us that we'll all be in Yerushalayim and the world will be restored to peace and it'll be like Gan Eden, but it won't be actually in a place called Gan Eden? If it's a place called Gan Eden, then that probably means that Gan Eden is in Eretz Yisrael. Because in order to reconcile this Rashi with all the Nevuos, we're going to go back to Eretz Yisrael. So if we're going back to Gan Eden, then Gan Eden has to be in Eretz Yisrael. So it's really a fascinating Rashi about Gan Eden. Okay. Another interesting Rashi about hidden brachos. What are the hidden brachos in the Tocha? The Tocha has a lot of klalos, but there are also some hidden brachos. So one hidden bracha is where Hashem promises that I'm going to attack the land. I'm going to turn the land into ruins. What's the lashon apasik v'hashimosi ani esaretz? I won't just afflict you with suffering, or with hunger, or with death, and with natural failure and disaster, but the land itself will suffer. The land itself will become parched. The land itself will become cursed. The land itself will become desolate. The land itself will become arid and infertile. So Rashi says, this is actually a hidden promise. Zumi the tova l'Yisrael. Shelo yimtzu ha'oivim nachas ruach b'yartzam shetei shomemes miyoshveha. That since we left Israel, this land has refused to be colonized long term, and refused to be civilized, and refused to be urbanized, and refused to be fertilized for centuries. One of the great miracles, quote-unquote, of Israel. That no matter how strong the empire was that came and tried to control it, this empire, this land, was never controllable. And no matter how long people tried to live there and establish long cities or large cities, this was never urbanized. When Mark Twain, very famous American author, visited Israel in the middle of the 19th century, his description of the land was like a wasteland, desolate, parched, cursed, dry, no life, weeds. And that's because the land was always waiting. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, you don't think that all of a sudden there'll be new empires. But think about all the empires that have tried to live in this land. The Muslims, the Christians, the famous British. I mean, look what the British Empire did across the world. And they weren't able to create that same permanent realities in permanent condition in Israel, the Turks. So Israel was holding back its capability, its potential, its fertility, waiting for children to return. Hashem is promising you, by the way, don't worry. I've got your back. The land is reserved. No one can take this land. Now part of that is, well, how do you know that our return here to Israel is redemptive? How do you know this isn't a flash in the pan? How do you know this isn't a transient experience? Well, the fact that after so many years in which this land could not be tilled, and its agriculture cannot be awakened, and its cities cannot be settled, all of a sudden in 70, 80 years, a little bit longer if you count the entire amount of time that Jews have been working on in Israel, say 100, 130 years, all of a sudden the desert has bloomed. All of a sudden cities are being built. All of a sudden roads are being built. All of a sudden the land that remained unnegotiable and unmanageable for thousands of years as part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise now is opening its arms and embracing her children as they return and giving her its fertility in giving her its ability to be tamed. So this is a bracha, but it's not just a bracha, it's also a prophecy that helps us understand why being back in Israel, how we know this is real. Another interesting Rashi, which is a little bit relevant to what happened last week in Meron. V'yeschem ezare bagoyim. I will scatter you. I won't just exile you, I will scatter you. Normally, when people go into exile, they tend to live in a few locations. So, for example, today you don't really have political exile, but you have Pakistani communities in certain places in the world. You have Sikh communities in certain places of the world. Also, when people are exiled, they tend to travel together to maintain their customs, to maintain their culture, to maintain. Jews have been not just exiled, Jews have been scattered. And Jews have been strewn across the world, scattered like the seeds across the world. Now, why is that true? Now, part of it is true. This is Hashem punishing us. This is a worse punishment than marching together and living in Rome or marching together. A few here, a few there, communities here, communities there. And what Rashi doesn't say is two things. First of all, the reason we're scattered like seeds is because we are seeds and we're meant to develop humanity. So Jews have to be scattered to all parts of this world in their exile. Exile is not ideal. Ideally, we should affect the world from our position and our perch in Israel. But when that plan fails, and when we wreck that plan, that second plan of Jewish input and Jewish influence is that Jews have to be scattered, so that there are Jews in every culture, so that there are Jews in every science and every society to advance the world morality, to advance the world scientifically, to advance the world economically. So the scattering, which is really a part of our intensification of our punishment, is also meant to enable Jews not just to affect one local culture, one small country. Let's say we all get exiled to Finland, so it affects the Finnish people, but we are in Spain, and we are in Rome, and we are in Italy, and we are in Russia, and we are in South America. So we're contributing to the human spirit throughout the world. The second part of this is, and this takes us back to Meron, is that one of the signs of returning to Israel is the fact that we're able to gather in large numbers like never before. The Gemara says in Brachos, if you see 600,000 Jews, you should make a bracha, because that's how many Jews were at Har Sinai. Could you imagine, throughout 2,000 years, when Jews read this Gemara, and they said, 600,000 Jews, impossible, I'll never see that. Because no matter how large the cities were, or the largest cities, I mean, how many Jews did you have, even in the largest areas of Jewish population? And even there, you couldn't congregate, because they were living in foreign lands. Jews can't congregate, you need permission, you're not local. A week after the Yom Yerushalayim victory, they spent a week clearing the rubble, and a week paving the plaza, and Jews were invited to the Kotel for the first time in 19 years. 200,000 people came on Shavuos to the cult. It's a very famous Shavuos. It was documented. I think it's the largest gathering of Jews in 2,000 years. I mean, since then we've had larger gatherings, but that 200,000 gathering in 1967 was the largest gathering. So think a lot about Meron and what it means to throng together. And those people were thronging together for spirituality, for Kabbalah. I mean, I was at a Shiva house yesterday, and one of the parents in Beitar said that one of the Rabbanim who tried to console him said that it's not common for people to go to Shemayim with 20,000 people saying Shema Yisrael. That's effectively what happened. Again, it's a tragedy, but we never had those throngs. So we throng for different reasons. I've been in throngs of 600,000 people at Lubavitch Yosef Slavaya. I've been in throngs of 40,000 people at the Kotel. That didn't happen before. That's a modern event. That's a reversal of this curse, Ve'ezera Bagoyim. When you're scattered amongst the nations, you're together with a few thousand Jews at most. All of a sudden, we're back in Eretz Yisrael, and we're getting together in larger groups, and we will one day get together again in larger groups when we're Ola Regel, and we're with millions of Jews, or hundreds of thousands. Hard to know how Ola Regel will take place, but with millions of Jews near Yerushalayim, in Yerushalayim. Hakeel was a thronging together. So part of the Jewish experience that was lost when we went into Galus is being in large groups of Jews. And now that we're back in Eretz Yisrael, we're starting to recover that. Sadly, last week, the infrastructure wasn't safe enough to support it. We hope that we'll throng together with better and safer conditions, but this is reversing the curse of Ve'ezer Rebbe Goyim. So three Rashis. Rashi number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will walk with us, will feel that intimacy and that parity, but it won't eliminate the hierarchy. We won't tremble, but we'll know that there's a difference. Will it be in Gan Eden? Sounds like, according to Rashi, we will realize Gan Eden in this world. Number two, the land will be frozen in time until the Jews come back. It won't be tillable agriculturally. It won't be conquerable socially and culturally. It will lay in waste, waiting for our children to return. Number three, HaKadosh Baruch Hu senses us to be spread amongst the Goyim. This does allow us to continue to impact humanity. And now that we're back, we're able to reverse that scattering. Okay. Boker Tov. Boker Tov.